let's be frank. Security and the steps we take to protect ourselves are never top of mind. In fact, most people tend to operate under the mindset that bad things happen to other people and companies, never hitting too close to home. Until it does. Maybe it's an email you click on, or a message that contains sensitive information you pass along to a coworker that winds up in an unsecured inbox. Regardless of the method or point of entry, bad actors or hackers will eventually attack if and when they can.
More and more people get into it. Is the same logic as when people are buying burglar alarms for home. So it usually sells greatly when home in your neighborhood gets broken in. You hear about it and then say like, I should protect myself. When it's within your circles, like your family or your friends work, whenever something like that happens, then those circles start to resonate with it. They need to get burned in order to learn about it.
Alan Durick isn't one of those kinds of people, though. Alan is the CTO and COO of Wire, and he lives with three key terms always top of mind: security, end-to-end encryption, and prevention. On this episode of IT Visionaries, Alan discusses some of the leading trends happening in the security space, including addressing the age-old issue of how users should be more proactive and less reactive. Plus, Alan details why email continues to be one of the most troubling forms of communication. Enjoy this episode. IT Visionaries is created by the team at Mission.org and brought to you by Salesforce Platform, the number one cloud platform for digital transformation of every experience. Innovate fast, empower every employee, and scale with confidence from anywhere, with a customer at the center of everything you do. Learn more at salesforce.com/platform.
Welcome, everyone, to another episode of IT Visionaries. And today we have a man of many titles, a co-founder, the CTO and COO of Wire, Alan Durick. Welcome to the show.
Thank you, Albert. Awesome to be on the show with you.
All right, man, let's get right into it. What exactly is Wire? What makes Wire unique?
So Wire, if I would try it, to describe it to someone that knows a bit about technology, but still that I try to avoid buzzwords and language that would not be understood by us insiders within the communication industry. So it would be like, it is a business communication platform, or the most secure business communication platform, as we like to call it, and also as a number of others is calling it. And when we are talking business communication platform, it is important to stress a kind of a dual nature of that platform. So one is part related to asynchronous collaboration, where you are sending messages, where you are integrating with the bots, where you are sending files, photos, stuff like that, like kind of what Slack is doing. And the other part would be real-time collaboration, or the conferencing part, like the one what Zoom is doing with audio calling, video calling, screen sharing, group video calls, etc. So Wire is like kind of a platform that merges both of those collaboration modes, and unlike the mentioned ones, like a Zoom and Slack, Wire does absolutely everything in a completely secure way with end-to-end encryption. So every message that is passed, every call that is made, absolutely everything is being end-to-end encrypted. And on top of this, when looking into collaboration solutions, what is quite interesting for Wire is also its deployment reach. So you can deploy Wire as cloud version. You can deploy it as an on-prem. And you can also deploy it with some of our special customers have completely off the grid and off the public internet within their self-contained networks.
So tell me a little bit about, because on the website, it comes right out the gate and says you are the most secure collaboration platform. What makes your system so secure? What are, I guess, your value props that you're focusing on? Because it's pretty cool. You guys have a lot of awards. You've won from InfoSec, Cybersecurity Excellence Awards. You know, G2's named you to a leader. Capterra's named you to a leader. So you've won a lot of awards for the cybersecurity element. Tell me what it is you are doing at the at technical level, and also who needs this level of security, because I think that's one of the more interesting parts of it and where you envision seeing and understanding why this level of security is necessary.
Excellent question. So I'll try to depict it with a first part related to algorithmic part. So as you know, not all end-to-end encryptions are equal or are the same. So the way that we are deploying our solution is characterized by the fact that every single message that we send, whether it is audio message, video message, picture, text, on message that someone else has passed, or if you are starting audio call, video call, absolutely everything is using different encryption key. And with every message that we send, we are also sending encryption key that other side would send to us, or that the other side would use to send message to us, which is next coming from their direction. So as you see here, we are ratcheting these keys, and they are used for every device that you are using, and for every message, as mentioned, that it's sent, making kind of every message like its own small fortress. And when you're asking me, like, if this kind of security is needed for everyone, or who are the ones that are using it, I would like there to use analogy with airbags in the cars. So you might also remember that from early days of airbags in the cars, maybe like 20 years ago, not all of the cars had airbags, and you needed to pay more money in order to have airbag. And also, it was not obvious case that airbags were quite useful in the car, and that they were needed. But then with the rise awareness of the potential damages that can happen when airbags are not used, and then with the help of regulation, airbags became a de facto standard in today's transport or automobile transport. So in the same way, like with a collaboration here, we have a transport of the messages, and also what we are taking care of is companies' privacies and also people's privacy. So in the same way as there you are with the cars transporting people, here you are transporting digital assets, and end-to-end encryption is there to protect it. And it should be always on, in the same way as airbags are always on the car. And in the same way, we see that regulatory bodies are helping spread of end-to-end encryption. And what is important to stress there is GDPR regulation, general data privacy regulation, which is assuming privacy by design. And this is basically what Wire, with its strongest grade of end-to-end encryption, is bringing to the game. So quite a long answer, but I hope it answers the question.
No, it does. I mean, but one of the things I want to think about and talk to us, our audience, about is what made you think about this back in 2000? Because the company dated, it looks like it started in 2012.
Right.
And since then, there has been a rise of technology communication tools. You mentioned a couple of them already. There are more. There's other companies that are getting into the game. Every day, it seems like there's going to be more chat tools, more digital web conferencing tools, there are companies that are in this space. They're getting acquired. They're getting spun off. Like, that's just, a lot is happening in regards to communication. And we've had a lot of guests on, you know, from Dialpad to Slack to LogMeIn. Like, there's tons of companies that are in this game. My question for you is, why in your mindset do messages need to have this level of encryption? Does it cause problems for end users? I'm curious what type of customers need this level of security and encryption, just so our audience can get a kind of understanding. Because I think a lot of us have, so I'll give you an example, right? When the rise of the pandemic happened, it started becoming very clear that it was actually quite easy to eavesdrop or drop in on, whether it was web conferencing, or it was pretty easy to get admitted into different communication tools pretty quickly. And those messages are not encrypted, because as soon as you have a seat at the table, you can see every message going back and forth. The way you described Wire is the sender has an encryption key, the recipient has an encryption key, every message is secured. Unless those two keys match, they can't even read the message. That's what you're saying, right?
Exactly, yeah.
So if a person dropped, so could a person drop into the middle of a Wire conference and just see what's going on, or would it be all fuzzy and jacked up for them? I'm trying to get an understanding of how that works.
Yeah, so this is actually what is the beauty of end-to-end encryption, that it eliminates men in the middle. And depending on company that is using a collaboration solution, there is a higher or lower sensitivity of information that they are passing. So some of our customers are large energy corporations whose trade secrets have been spoofed in the past.
Wow.
So they have a concern about information when they are intending to buy a specific oil field in Africa or Asia. And then if competition or someone else gets that information, it can be quite damaging for them. So this is like kind of a information that we are protecting. And then as well, we have a number of customers in the governmental sector, also some of elite military units are using Wire for communication. And as you can imagine, all of those guys are handling quite sensitive information. But then beside those guys, we have also a number of doctors, practitioners that are using Wire. We have also a number of NGOs that are using Wire. We have also a couple of large banks that are using Wire. So world's largest private bank is using Wire for their business continuity communication in the case of attacks to their system, or in the case of major situations like with NotPetya, they have a way to continue their communication. So there is, as you see there, a wide range of cases when it is important to have your communications protected. And the thing there which is helping a lot is that with a GDPR and similar regulations that we see are now being embraced around the world, the regulators are making sure that companies are not using, I would say, like a reckless solutions where almost any script kid can take their customer base information, and then that information is being sold and is being misused, and all sorts of things are happening, and all sorts of privacy and security exploits are happening with it. And we know as well that email is an amazing tool that has wide reach, but this is a tool that's been around for 50 years. And at a time when it's been deployed, we didn't live in a digital world. We lived in an analog world. And now 50 years after, when we live in a digital world, we see that it is inadequate, and that email servers are also the weakest link in the chain, and that loads of exploits, attacks are happening through the mail servers.
Yeah. So tell me about what you're starting to, this is fascinating. Tell me what you're starting to see in regards to, because you're right, so much communication information is being transferred more than ever. And I'd be interested to know, like, from your perspective, what you're seeing on in regards to threat attempts or attack, you know, hack attempts. What is happening in the open marketplace? Are they increasing? Are they decreasing? Are people becoming more sophisticated? Or how sophisticated are they getting in regards to their ability to, you know, intercept communications? Because like you said, you, since you deal with some of the more private and secure companies, I feel like you would then face a lot of attempts to intercept these communications. Mm-hmm. I'm curious what you're seeing from, like, on the, from the other side. Like, what do you see as hackers? What are some of the things they're trying to do to intercept these communications?
So on that side, attempts, and not only attempts, but also the exploits that are happening are getting really super sophisticated and with amazing degree of automatization. Also, you can see a application of artificial intelligence and a number of other fascinating technologies in order to commit the cybercrime. And when you hear that even Warren Buffett is saying that cybercrime is the biggest threat for economies around the world, then you know that time is now to start protecting yourselves and to start, you know, using airbags in your car, to use that analogy. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, it is $6 trillion per year problem, and it has astounding cumulative annual growth rate. And just like hoping that nothing will happen to your company or your organization, if you are dealing with any kind of somewhat sensitive information, is not acceptable behavior. And then as well, you see that even for the companies that do not have very sensitive information, then again, if they get hacked through the email server, and then through that path, they may be exposed to all sorts of ransomware. So there is a number of different attack vectors that need to be considered, and they need to be protected. And I think also we can predict that within a couple of years, insurance for your company, insurance premium is going to be higher if you're absolutely not doing anything related to cybersecurity, and if you're not using tools that have a security and privacy by design, and that are applying also some of those zero trust security principles.
No, I can see that. I can see legislation or litigation being the driver. I don't know how familiar you are with the U.S. tobacco industries, but effectively, when people started suing the tobacco companies and were winning huge sums of money for making them sick and using deceptive advertising practices and so on, it became their responsibility and fault. And so then they had to change the way, I mean, they still can sell tobacco, but you know how it's labeled, how it's recognized, the insurance premiums, as you suggested, probably all went up. Insurance premiums for smokers went up. But your mindset there, I agree with, is because if you are transferring, if you're a business that handles transfers, whatever, sensitive information, and it starts leaking out and someone litigates against you and you lose, it's going to be a serious problem. And it's going to change the way companies think about encryption. I'm curious for yourself, why do you think there is a stigma associated with encryption? You'll hear sometimes people just say, just deploy zero trust. Don't worry about encryption. Just assume that nothing is can be stopped. Just don't transfer information like that. There's kind of ideas like that. There's obviously ultra secure. Everything's got to be within a specific network. You've already mentioned before people that actually build private networks to communicate on so that it doesn't share over the internet or public clouds. There's people that go to that length, companies that go to that length. Why do you think there is a stigma at all associated with encryption? Why do you think people have such very differing opinions on security? It seems like we should align, because like on the airbag issue you mentioned, there's alignment. I think everyone universally agrees airbags are good for you, but not everyone's aligned on how to secure information and data. Why do you think that is?
Yeah, excellent one. And actually, fairly complex one to answer, because it is of a somewhat philosophical nature. And it is that in our human nature, people are prone to take a risk. And also, there is a number of studies, utility, so-called utility study and others that are basically telling you that if, for instance, you offer people a reward of, let's say, $5,000 and that they can also take $50,000 with like a 20% or even more, like 30-40% chance to take it, they're going to take the money and they're not going to take the risk to get the higher amount of money. But at the same time, also, if you tell them like, okay, now you have to pay $20 per month, or you risk to pay a 1 million fine, majority of them is not going to pay $20 and take it, but they're rather going to be facing risk and the bigger consequence. So similar is here with the security. It goes against the way that we are wired. And then when things are changing there, things are changing when you become aware of the consequences, and when those consequences for you are the ones that you can not take them. For instance, I'm a snowboarder, and 15 years ago, I would never think of a wearing helmet, and you know, it was like kind of unpopular, and you would look funny with a helmet on snowboard.
You gotta look cool on the slopes, man. You can't be having that helmet.
Exactly. Yeah, but you know, like then you start seeing in the media how people lose their life, and also there was a trigger for this one as well with one famous actress that lost her life on a Canadian slopes, and even it was a green or a blue slope, so it wasn't some very difficult slope, and it was all over CNN and all over major media, and a couple of cases like that. And some years after, every one of us is wearing helmet, and you know, now you look cool with a helmet. Just, you know, you need to put a Red Bull sticker or something like that.
There you go. I know what you're talking about. I think you're talking about Natasha Richardson, I believe her name. Liam Neeson's wife.
Yeah, it was Liam Neeson's spouse.
Yeah. There was also another famous one, Michael Schumacher, the F1 racer. He didn't die in the accident, but he got life-changing paralysis and coma. Yeah.
Exactly. So see, these are some of the things that need to happen in order for those security solutions to take off. And with the digital domain, I think also like NotPetya was a very good wake-up call. And then it is not a question if some of those major exploits are going to be happening. It's just a question when they are going to be happening. And you see like all sorts of interesting cases that are happening with the ransomware and that are happening with respect to exploit of sensitive companies' data and even private people data.
So here's an interesting question for you, because you are based in Switzerland. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's right.
So you're based in Switzerland. Europe is much more stringent on data, what you as a company, right? What data you collect, what you store, how you protect it. America is much more lax. And then other countries are, you know, even more lax than America. And then other countries, of course, are more strict than Europe, all the greater of Europe.
Mm-hmm.
Why do you think even on a, like even internationally, is not quite agreed upon for how to encrypt and store information? Where do you think this like, I don't even want to call it a black swan event, but it's probably going to be a game changer, right? Like you kind of already hinted at it. Typically, I talked about the tobacco companies when they had their game changer moment. You talked about like how helmets have a game changer moment.
Yeah.
What industry or what countries do you see as potentially being most susceptible to the biggest threat? Because, you know, like I mentioned, Europe already has big stringent rules, and I believe Europe's already levying big fines on companies for failing to protect information.
Oh, yeah. So it is, but a GDPR, you're spot on there. It's like a 4% of a worldwide revenues or like a minimum 20 million euros fee that can result from this kind of negligence on the company side. You see there as well that California started following in the footsteps over GDPR. So California's Data Privacy Act as well is getting in shape. There, what is needed to happen is just that awareness of some of those cases is rising, and that it comes to the same level as it was the case with tobacco that you've been talking about, and about the airbags. And I think we are getting closer to that tipping point.
So that there's just that many, I guess, attacks. Or I guess, you know, there used to be this thought process that if you can intercept information, you couldn't really do much with it. Now, if I have AI, ML, algorithmic learning on my side, I can now use, if I could somehow get a pipe of communication into any organization, now I don't have to read it. I can use tools to sift out all the important information points and then, you know, script an attack of who knows what I would do with it. But I think your point is right. It's like as tools keep evolving, the jeopardy of that data and the utility of it becomes even more nefarious. Because the reason why I always think about this is because on one hand, so these are just some of the more US cases, but there was, for example, the big Equifax hack.
Mm-hmm.
So where all the people information got compromised. There have been hacks at different hotel companies. You know, Yahoo has had a hack. Yahoo's, and it's not quite the same as what Wire does, but it's similar in regards to like that's an email system. So if we got compromised, every single communication would happen.
Mm-hmm.
You know, eBay has famously had a compromising event. So you would know all my transactional data, my search data, potentially my communication data between buyers and sellers.
Yeah.
So on one hand, those things are happening. But simultaneously, if I look at myself, you know, and I think luckily for most people, not much has really happened to them, even though they've been part of these information leaks. You know, if my hotel account got it compromised, but is my life different? No one took on my identity. No one took anything from me. So I just shrugged my shoulders and just continue moving on. Of course, there are people who have had their identities compromised or lost tons of money.
Exactly.
So on one hand, attacks are happening more frequently. We agree. On the other hand, leaks are happening more frequently, we agree. But on the other, and we also agree that a lot of people are being negatively affected, but there's still a huge army, like group of people that even though they've been information compromised, they haven't been affected. Why do you think that? And I think that's where it's the public's perception of leaking information might have gotten to the point where it's like, it doesn't matter if it leaks because everyone's information is leaked. What do you say to people who think that way, which is everything's already out there, so there's nothing to hide?
Yeah, so there basically it's the first thing is like to make sure that companies are not messing up and basically just not being negligent about our data, because as you asked me and as we were discussing tools that guys in a cybercrime are using are getting amazingly automated and amazingly more sophisticated, so that they don't need only to attack like a billion worth individuals or a companies. So this threshold is getting lower and it's getting wider. And it is also quite interesting case. For instance, one of our customers is family-run business that employs hundreds of people around Europe. So what happened to them last year was the case where CFO got email from CEO to transfer specific amount of money, which was in the millions of dollars, to a specific account. And this kind of situation happened to them twice. And after that, they figure out that they are being hacked and that they are being, in a very sophisticated manner, exploited. And they figure out that they need to move away from email. And that's when they started talking to us. But for them, this loss of plus 10 million euros was completely irreversible. And as you see, there is a more and more of cases of impersonation at the levels where it is hard then to avoid this kind of fraud happening to companies, and how they can impersonate with this great accuracy. It's due to those things that you just mentioned, that they can collect so much information about us from the previous exploits, plug it into a good artificial intelligence tools, and boom, there you go.
I appreciate you sharing that information, because you know that's the big question, I think, is on one hand, I think people who are in the know that this is a very big problem. And then I think there's just a big piece of our public that just says, we don't think it's a problem yet because nothing bad's happened to us. And so we don't think of it as like, oh, this is going to be a life-threatening thing. I think people have gotten so used to seeing hacks in news about hacks that they're just getting numb to it. But it hasn't happened yet. Like you said, it hasn't happened yet. That monster event where everyone's information is compromised. It's like often depicted in movies, I feel like, but it hasn't happened yet in real life. I think it, you know, potentially, who knows how it's going to go down. But I agree with you. I think there's going to be a landmark case of some unbelievable fine or litigated lawsuit against a company. It's going to reframe the way people think about how they should protect information. I do agree with you there.
Yeah, absolutely. And you see, the other cases where more and more people get into it is the same logic as when people are buying burglar alarms for home. So it usually sells greatly when home in your neighborhood gets broken in.
Yep.
You hear about it and then say like, maybe I should protect myself. So, you know, when it's within your vicinity or, you know, within your circles, like your family or your friends work, whenever something like that happens, then those circles start to resonate with it. Just it's unfortunately they need to get burned in order to learn about it. It's like, you know, a bit sad case also is my private example with my parents who've been smokers for most of their life until they started to be aware how bad it is to be a smoker. And then first they stopped smoking in front of us kids when brother and me were kids. And then after that, they stopped smoking in the car. And then after, you know, some time, they stopped smoking completely. But due to this reason, also, I lost my father when he was 69. So those are, you know, those are the things that are quite tough experiences. Just so this was like with a tobacco and awareness, like with loss of a private information and security, it is as dangerous, just in a different way.
No, I appreciate you sharing that insight into your family and background. I think it's a microcosm of what happens with people when they think something's not their problem. It's not their problem until it is their problem, right? That's usually what causes the change.
Exactly, and then it gets like a really bad end, you know. So
yeah, it's a little too late for that, but
exactly, and you know, we can still be cool with a beanies instead of helmets, but. We can be cool with a helmet as well.
There you go. Hey, listen, Alan, before we end the show, we always got to lighten it up a little, and we got to talk a little bit and let our audience get to know you a little better. So we're going to do the lightning round. The lightning round is brought to you by the Salesforce platform, the number one cloud platform for digital transformation of every experience. Alan, this is where I ask you a couple quick questions, quick answers to get to know you outside of work. You ready?
Sure. Absolutely.
You say you're a snowboarder. Would you consider yourself good?
Yes. Let's say like a very good and goofy, not a regular.
You're a goofy footer. Okay. Where's the most memorable place you've snowboarded?
Most memorable place, Niseko, Japan.
Oh, Japan. I've heard that. I believe that area has the world's most snowfall. Is that right? Every year they have the most snowfall in the whole world.
Yes, Hokkaido. Yes, you're right. It's on a Hokkaido and Hokkaido Island, and it's a thick snow. It's like a super light powder, because snow that is coming there is coming from Kamchatka, from Russia, over the sea, and then, you know, sea with a saltiness dries it out, and then as it comes, it's a real powder.
So it's like a dust almost, very light and airy.
Yes, yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
How many other cybersecurity experts have you met that also snowboard?
We need to include also skiers. Yeah. So I would say like a dozen.
Dozen. Yeah, man. Listen, all the developers, we got to get outside more. You know what I mean?
Absolutely.
Developers don't get outside enough.
Definitely.
What's a hobby you've picked up in 2020?
Hobby picking up during the quarantine period is making my own kombucha and kefir, and started learning French.
Okay, so you now make your own kombucha. We call it, all right, I don't even know, you said kombucha. Is that the proper pronunciation?
Yeah.
I thought it was kombucha.
Yeah, it should be, because it's coming from Russia, and they call it either kombucha or kombucha even.
Okay, so you make your own kombucha.
Yes.
You are now learning French. And what was the third thing you were doing?
Kefir, water kefir and the milk kefir.
Listen, you sound like a healthy guy. You sound like a very healthy guy. You're drinking, you're making your own kombucha. You go snowboarding a lot. Or would you consider yourself a healthy person, a health nut?
It is more like, you know, to balance 5 to 7 shots of espresso that I take during the day, and you know, a bunch of croissants. I'm a bit binary on that side, you know, like either I don't eat any croissants and the bad stuff, or I just go overboard. So I need to compensate a bit with this.
You and I are very similar. You're just as likely to see me eat a salad as I am to eat a sleeve of Oreos.
Exactly. You know, you enjoy the life, and you know, it should not be burdened with the prejudices. Yeah.
Well, Alan, I want to thank you for joining us today on IT Visionaries. Thank you for sharing some of what you're doing at Wire, as well as your, you know, opinions and views on the future of cybersecurity. I thought that was pretty insightful. And, you know, we look forward to seeing continued success for you and your company.
Thank you so much, Albert. Fantastic show. Super interesting questions. Once more, thank you for inviting me, and greetings to all of your listeners.
IT Visionaries is created by the team at Mission.org and brought to you by the Salesforce Customer 360 platform, the number one cloud platform for digital transformation of every experience. Build connected experience, empower every employee, and deliver continuous innovation with the customer at the center of everything you do. Learn more at salesforce.com/platform.